Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is so wonderful that there are places within other Puranas that forget the benediction that it says that, but if you simply keep Srimad Bhagavatam on your shelf and respect it, something. Sins are washed away and self-realization enters into one's. And Prabhupada was describing when we would distribute, just if people touch the book, their lives can transform. If they simply read one sentence, one page, their lives can completely change. What to speak of, it's very powerful. It's not only it's heavy, it's very powerful. Very powerful messages. In a morning walk conversation in Los Angeles, normally Prabhupada in morning walks would go in Los Angeles to Venice Beach, but one time he went to a park instead, Chevy Chase. It's a nice park. Prabhupada was in this mood. Where is that institution, so-called scientists, that understand the difference between a living body and a dead body? They think that everything comes from chemicals and afterwards everything is finished. But what kind of science? Where is there that science? This is just elementary, but where is there that machine that operates without a person? However sophisticated, complicated, every machine requires an operator. And where is that operator of this universe? Supposing it came from a Big Bang, where is the operator of this universe? Rascals. And they want to give themselves so much credit for so many technological advancements because their intelligence behind it. Where is the intelligence behind this very sophisticated creation? Rascal scientists. They do not know even the difference between living body and dead body. Where is that institute that teaches the fundamental basis upon which all other knowledge is built is the difference between life and death, living and dying? This they do not know. It's all waste of time. The knowledge of a dead man. Prabhupada saw it. It wasn't just like, you know, rebellious adolescence or something. On the strength of scripture, the persons who have the capacity of intellect to see and to give, be the brain that gives direction to the rest of the society. Prabhupada was saying they've all become sudras. This is Kali Yuga. They've completely abandoned what their real responsibility is, to understand what is eternal, to understand the truths of the scripture. And they become the hired out sudras of the Vaishyas, wagging their tail saying, please give me a job, please throw me a bone. And if someone doesn't throw them a bone, they starve. They become simply sudras. I can bark, woof, woof. I can wag my tail. I can jump. Give me a job. But this Srimad Bhagavatam is to put the brain back into the head. Just as Vidura is attempting to put the, you were using the term this morning, the higher nature back into the operative position. Or the understanding of the real objective of life. The souls becoming released from the bondage of material existence and coming to the light, coming to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, becoming eternally situated in loving service. So we are reading this morning, Dhritarashtra was not capable of that. He was not advanced enough in devotion. He was advanced enough to come to this Dhira stage. So Prabhupada very clearly, in the verses that we're going to be discussing this evening, Prabhupada very clearly makes this a sequential Dhira, Sannyas, and Narottama. But the way that it's described, I'm just making a comment here, that the sannyas is coming forth out of this. This is the non-devotional sannyas coming out of frustrated sentiment. And frustrated sentiment, so my assessment is that frustrated sentiment, after some time, one becomes lonely. And frustrated sentiment wears off, and then it becomes, I want to go back home. Or if not, I want to go back home. I want some relation. I want a material relationship. I want to satisfy that which. So, in other words, frustration is the flip side of attachment. Another phrase like that. When it comes to boy-girl things, something is the other side of detachment. I mean, the other side of attraction. Anyway, you get the idea. One who leaves something because I don't like it, there's some indication of there's an attachment there. And it seems to me that Dhira is one can go away from home at some length of time and feel fine about it. Like Vidura, he himself underwent. He left home for a long period of time. For some 30-something years. It's a long period of time. Anybody here 30-something years old yet? How old are you? Huh? 34. Okay. Anyways, that's just the definition that he puts after those terms. It also seems that Dhira is go and remain undisturbed. Sannyas is you just like finish it off. But both are on the material platform. That's the point. That's the main point. Like he wasn't recommending that in some formal way Dhritarashtra take sannyas. He was recommending that with Gandhari, with or without Gandhari, leave at once and don't turn back, don't look back, don't think about back, just go one way ticket, don't come back. Dira with no regrets. So the Bhagavatam is in so many, like, you know, patterns and so many nice paintings and pictures and so many very beautiful choice poetic words bringing us to that position. Just by reading Srimad, just the culture of absorbing oneself in the message of Srimad Bhagavatam carries one to that place. Maybe imperceptibly, maybe very rapidly. I'll tell you one story. Just happened, maybe about 3 weeks ago. In Vrindavan, or Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. A number of you have been there, right? How many have been to Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan? Only two of you. Three of us. Someday you will go. And you've seen pictures. There's a, you know, a big wall surrounding, a wall and a big fence. And you go in the main gate. And to the right there's some shops, and to the left is Prabhupada Samadhi, and there's a big arch between the two, and then straight ahead, and the Food for Life area is on the right, where they serve pilgrims and widows and whoever. And straight ahead is the temple, and over to the right-hand side is the Gurukul, you know, further past. So as you walk into the main gate, it's white and black checkered marble, very large marble slabs. And there's a book table over here and a book table over there. So, but once you're in, you're just like, you know, you're, the noise of the street, and at least the all the commotion is different. It's you're in the temple area. About 2 weeks or so ago, one crimson-clad, long-bearded guru with all of his followers, some number of followers, came in. He came right over to the book table. And one Mataji, young, I think it's like East European Mataji, she showed him the literatures, and he took Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Put it under his arm, kept going, went into the temple, darshan of the deities, and back out again. The next day he came to the book table alone. And he wanted to express to the young Mataji that sold the book that the way that your Acharya has explained Bhagavad Gita, said, I've never heard anything like this before. I've been teaching Bhagavad Gita for 30 years. And now I understand that I never understood Bhagavad Gita. Your Acharya is speaking in such a way that it is as if he's with Krishna and Arjuna. And he's feeling their presence, and he's explaining exactly what they mean. And she said tears were coming down his beard, I guess. Cheek and beard. And he'd come back alone just to tell her that. And then we gathered his composure and turned around and went back out the main gate. And the Mataji wrote, I don't cry like that when I read Bhagavad Gita. So apparently, you know, the Bahunam, Janmanam, Ante. He had, for so, probably lifetimes, so at least for so long, there was something of a sincere desire. But he never had contact with that which could give him guidance in the genuine thing. And so when he did, his heart was moved very dramatically. So this can happen very quickly. Or for most of the rest of us, very gradually. Oh, so gradually. Very gently, gradually. Very comfortably, gradually. And that's because, what's the difference? Why does one not advance rapidly and another one advances rapidly? And the answer is attachment. When we consciously or unconsciously hold on to things that are temporary and illusory, and we have the expectation that they're going to bring happiness to us, and so, you know, we choose to not get the message. Although the message is repeated and repeated in so many nice ways repeated, sometimes very strong ways repeated, and we choose to not get it. At some point, it's going to be, if we want to become Krishna conscious, we have to get it. And the getting it comes from wanting to get it. And wanting to get it even can be stirred by the association of those who are sadhus. So a very important message, like theme of this chapter, is there's three, all related to a sadhu. What are the qualities of a sadhu? What's the role of a sadhu? What does a sadhu do? What are the duties of a sadhu? So you've heard this before, qualifications of and duties of a sadhu. And then, what's their message? Cut through their words. And the cut may be, you know, very slow, gentle cut. It may be very quick and sharp. But the effect is the same. This affinity for expecting happiness from the senses contacting sense objects is got to go. And I mentioned this morning, I'll mention it again. I think I've lost track of days. Anyway, I'll just say it again. In relation to in the Bhishma Dev section, in the chapter 9 of this canto, Prabhupada covers the topic Brahma Jigyasa, inquiry into Brahman. And there's a preliminary something that sets the atmosphere for Brahma Jigyasa. And that's somehow or another, one gets it. This place that's impermanent is not my real home. Or as Bhaktisiddhanta said, the material world is not a fit place for a gentleman. Like a latrine or an outhouse, you do your business and get out. Don't linger. Don't make this, oh, this is a very nice latrine. I think I'll stay here for a few lifetimes. It's not the purpose of the material world. It's not our home. It's not dukkhalayam ashashvatam. By design, it gives us various dukkhas and various kleshas every step. And the foolish person thinks that's life, or this is very nice. You got to take the good with the bad. And let me just chase this carrot a little while longer. Another few more steps, I'll get the carrot. Just keep going. Mudha. But there are those that get it. That it's just, this isn't, something's wrong. Fundamentally not right. As Prabhupada says it in other places. Why is it that everyone wants happiness and everyone gets distress? Why is it? Why is it that everyone wants to live forever and everyone has to die? Why is it? You know, there's some very... And there's something fundamentally... You can go on with that list of those fundamental questions. And although one may not know what the alternatives are, this doesn't meet universal expectations. There's something fundamentally not right here. So that's the environment or atmosphere for Brahma Jigyasa. What is there that's permanent? What is there that brings real happiness? What is it? And how to get there? And I would assume that each one of us has gone through that to a certain degree, lesser or greater degree. I know that I went through that. I was in a fit of rebellion against being... Anyway, I don't want to get into autobiographical stuff, but I felt really cheated by the machinery of so-called education and just going along on the conveyor belt of life, just being good, do all the good things and don't do the bad things, and that's what you're supposed to do. Just be a donkey. Just keep, get good grades, be nice, be socially Don't ask those questions. Who am I? Where are we going anyways? Why is all this... I remember going to visit my brother. I said, you know, why are people so human, so inhuman to one another? Why? Everybody wants to be treated nicely and they're treating each other in some other way. Just, you know, why? Is there an alternative to this? Anyway, Brahma Jigyasa, the Prabhupada's statement, he doesn't make a big thing. I've expanded it, but it's the simple statement is that there is some atmosphere from which Brahma Jigyasa grows. And when Brahma Jigyasa grows, something very important happens. Krishna sends the message. He sends a messenger. When one begins to inquire about what is eternal, Krishna within the heart, he recognizes perfectly what is that. So he sends. You got it? You're looking puzzled. You follow? By the mercy of Krishna, one gets guru. By the mercy of guru, one gets Krishna. So that's what I'm explaining. Krishna sees, so he sends the means. If you actually want to know, here's the means to know. Here's bona fide scripture, not just gobbledygook. Just like this guru with, you know, 30 years, I've been teaching Bhagavad Gita, and I had no idea what is Bhagavad Gita. I mean, it's another way of saying the same is, I've been cheated, and I've been cheating other people. He didn't use that specific expression, but essentially that's what he's... In an honest way, that's what he's saying. Teaching without knowing, that's cheating. But he was also cheated. the society of the cheaters and the cheated, the material world. Now here's something genuine. So Krishna sends. And when Krishna sends, what is that message of the representative of Krishna that Krishna sends? My dear spirit soul, you're absolutely right. This is not your place in so many ways. Prabhupada has explained that one of the fundamental primary duties of a guru or teacher is to make it very clear that this material world is a problematic place and one doesn't belong here. In other words, if you cannot detach yourself from the temporary, you're not going to go to the permanent. And think about it, how many times in different ways in Prabhupada's teachings, as well as the verses of the Bhagavatam itself, that message of detachment is there. Certainly it's in this chapter. The message of detachment is incomplete. Dira and sannyas are incomplete. The message of the Bhagavatam takes us, it's Paramahansa literature. It's meant to take us to that stage where meditation goes with great focus upon the personality of Godhead. And that principle is so powerful. I'll give some examples, but it's so powerful that an unqualified person can become qualified instantly. That's an exaggeration, right? No, it's not an exaggeration. Like that. And what Prabhupada writes is in proportion to one's sincerity of purpose. Small thing. Sincerity of purpose. So what is the eligibility of a candidate for devotional service according to Nectar of Devotion? One's sincere desire. One's eagerness. Eagerness. Not for sense gratification, but eagerness for the genuine thing. That which is not infested with the inebrieties of material existence. The genuine thing. And what price do I have to pay for that genuine thing? Whatever the price is, you name it, I'll put it on the table. I'm ready. I give my life. I'm giving my life for illusion. Why not give my life for reality? And there's austerities in going for reality. There's austerities in going for illusion. Mega austerities. And no shelter, no end to it. Just keep going on to the donkey program the next lifetime. And the next lifetime. I don't want the donkey program anymore. No, thank you. So whatever the price is, there's so a genuine eagerness, not just to the sannyas idea of renouncing out of frustration the problematic situation. I want the real thing. So, in proportion to one's sincerity of purpose, this Bhagavad Dharma works. And Bhagavad Dharma works not only when you leave home. One can prepare for that throughout one's life. One should therefore practice devotional service at home. How to do that? Hearing and chanting the holy name, quality, form, pastimes, entourage, etc., in association with pure devotees And this practice will help one awaken God consciousness in proportion to one's sincerity of purpose. You mean it's not mechanical? That's the message. Devotional service is not a mechanical process. In the course of this visit, I'm not going to get into particulars, but one place I went, I heard from a number of devotees the same message. I used to think that Krishna consciousness meant doing certain sets of things. You go to the temple, you chant, you rise early, put on tilak, and, you know, don't talk prajalpa, and, you know, it's a set of behaviors. Now I'm understanding Krishna consciousness in a completely different way. The behaviors help. I mean, chanting is the essence, but its effectiveness is in proportion to one's sincerity of purpose. One must have the proper purpose in mind. And if it's not in mind, then it needs to be induced by those who can bring it out. And then you have to stay with that purpose while you're doing even the 9 processes of devotional service, what to speak of all the other things. That's Krishna consciousness. It's the cultivation of consciousness along with appropriate set of behaviors suitable for one who's in God consciousness. One helps the other. Then Prabhupada turns it the other way around. What about those that don't have that sincerity of purpose, but they have another purpose? They want temporary things. And he says, as we know from Queen Kunti's prayers, one who desires material opulence, the sincere calling for the Supreme Lord, that sincere purpose just doesn't manifest in their heart. Moreover, Prabhupada says something very heavy here. The Supreme Lord does not give any direction to such persons who worship him for material gain. I mean, it's not like he's in their hearts and he's actually saying, hello, you know, this is not really what's... But they can't hear it. The message of Bhagavad Gita is the same as the message of Krishna from within the heart. Sarvadharmam pratyajamami. So it's the same message. So the message is there, but the connection with that message isn't there. Krishna is not guiding the lives of such persons who want material gain. So now we're back into this area of attachments. And when there's attachments, progress is either, you know, ranging from negligible to slow. And if one wants to make advancement, then one has to, this atmosphere for Brahmajigyasa, the recognizing, and don't forget, keep it mindful. This is not a suitable place for a gentle soul to live. I'm not looking to make a permanent settlement here. I'm looking to connect with the eternal. And so from that point, the inquiry is how to make that connection. And following the inquiry, the answers, I continue to cultivate that. The sincerity of purpose continues through good association. And the sustaining of a conscious, sincere purpose. I want my connection with the Supreme Lord as it's more meaningful to me than anything. Whatever it takes, whatever the cost, whatever the tribulation, whatever are the temporary, even the good times, the bad times. I'm not going to get distracted by the good times or discouraged by the bad times. I want one thing. Vyavasayat mika buddhi. I want one thing. Ekeha kuru nandana. And I know the means for me to get that is through these explicit instructions how to get there. I'm just staying with great faith in that position. Such materialistic devotees may be blessed by the Lord with material benefits, but they cannot reach the stage of first-class human being as above mentioned. Then Prabhupada says there are many such examples of persons who have been successful in that. Mahatma Vidura is one, and he's come very compassionately to rescue one who's lost. So that's the role of the sadhu and the message of the sadhu, and I'm going through it very carefully once again, although you've heard it so many times, because it's important to capture the message. It's good that we're sitting here hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Just that in itself, punya shravana kirtana. So that all that's going on, even if we're not fully conscious. But it's meant to become fully conscious, capture the message. It's not just to make us pious. It's not just to manage the reactions due to our past misdeeds and involvement with material energy and make us good so we can enjoy the fruits of goodness, live a nice life, and die peacefully. That's not the message of the Bhagavatam. Those things can happen, but that's not the message of the Bhagavatam. We're meant to make this, I hope I'm getting through, but we're meant to make our connection with Krishna. It's a Paramahamsa message. It's meant to transform us into that stage, especially if we, in the course of this life, work on our principle, the thing that's right in the priority position, the attachment to the Supreme. The purpose behind, as Rupa Goswami teaches, what's the purpose behind all vidhis? It's to enhance our loving relationship with Krishna, to become conscious of Krishna, to hear the glories of Krishna, to become attracted to Krishna, certainly detached from matter, further detached from matter, but more importantly, attached to Krishna. To become lovers of Krishna. And through that medium, to know Krishna. And one who knows Krishna loves Krishna. Beyond theoretically, practically. So there's no going back. In this lifetime and after this lifetime, you know, we've finished your business. So a point that Prabhupada is making in the conclusion of this purport is this becomes possible through the agency of Vidura. Now I'm going to share with you just, you know, the discussions, the concluding discussions just before coming here in Delhi was in chapter 18 of the first canto. That's what we were discussing. 18 and 19 are the storyline is Prikshit's mistake, getting cursed, renouncing his kingdom. Shukadeva Goswami comes and they meet, and again, the qualifications of a sadhu and receiving a sadhu and qualifications of hearing, and then presenting the questions of Shukadeva Goswami and the stages set for the second canto begin. So before that storyline comes, there's there's a section where the sages of Naimisharanya and Sutta have some exchange, and it takes about 20 verses, 22 verses exactly. And the sages, in short, they're fired up. They want to hear this subject matter, and they glorify the qualifications of the speaker, Sutta. They glorify it in many ways, but chief is that he, as a devotee, he's both learned and pure. Pure is more important, but he's learned also. He can answer their questions. He can explain very clearly, and everything is on the platform of realization. It's not just theoretical, and we really want to hear the topics of Krishna, and they're specific about Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna this, and Krishna that, Krishna this. And then Sutta Goswami speaks. It connects with what we're covering here. The first thing that Sutta Goswami says is expressions of humility. Actually, the fact of the matter is, I have no qualification. The fact of the matter is, I'm disqualified. Even before I got started, by birth I was disqualified. By low birth. And low birth, by that he means, I mean, he's the son of Ramaharshan Sutta. But Ramaharshan Sutta was from a pratiloma marriage, where his mother was a Brahmani and his father was a Kshatriya. So he was entitled, with the service of a Brahmana, taking the caste of his mother, but it's a pratiloma marriage and not ideal at all from a material point of view. But being the disciple of Vyas, those things were, Vyas accepted him, and but his lower nature came out when Balaram came to the place where he was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. He was the first speaker after Shukadeva, until it was suddenly interrupted by Balaram's coming into the arena. You know this. Balaram came into the arena where Ramaharshan Sutta was seated, speaking the message that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. Balaram came into Naimisharanya, to a sacred place. Everybody stood and offered their respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person who is the object of glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam, except one person, the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramaharshan Sutta, because he was thinking, I'm speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, I should just continue speaking the Srimad, I should offer my respect to the Srimad Bhagavatam and just continue speaking. And Balaram, from that behavior, he could understand consciousness. There's a consciousness of pride in the heart of this person. And such a person is not a qualified speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. He took a blade of kusa grass, approached Ramaharshan Sutta, touched his chest with it, and pierced his chest with the kusa grass, and he instantly died. Bloody mess all over the Vyasa Sun. Imagine that created a bit of a stir in the sacred arena. And when Balaram saw the confusion that had been created, he volunteered, "If you like, I can bring him back to life. Would you like that?" "No, no, no, you're the Supreme Personality of God, whatever you want, but what about our sacrifice?" So Balaram suggested, "Well, the son of the father is representative of the father, and Suta Goswami, he was also there hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, so after we clean up the Vyasa-san a little bit, Suta can sit there and he can be the speaker of the Bhagavatam." So Suta is saying, by birth, I'm low-born. I'm not qualified. But having heard from Shukadev Goswami, this process of descending knowledge is so powerful that those disqualifications can be removed. At once. Exaggeration, right? No. In proportion to one's sincerity of purpose, at once. And then he describes, "What you want me to do is describe the indescribable. Krishna, he is inconceivable. He is unlimited. And I'll tell you very factually, it's not just a humble statement. I'm very limited. And he's unlimited. He is supremely independent. And I'm completely dependent. But if the supreme independent chooses to empower the dependent, then the dependent, at least to a limited degree, to the degree that one is empowered, one can describe the unlimited. The dependent can describe the independent. This is this descending knowledge process. Not the ascending knowledge, but the descending knowledge process. He's glorifying the process. He's glorifying the way that the process is introduced in a descending manner. He's glorifying the process itself, and then he glorifies the object of the process, the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's fully independent. He gives different examples. He said the demigods, humans approach the demigods because they want something from the demigods. The demigods approach the goddess of fortune because they want something from the goddess of fortune. And the goddess of fortune is serving, massaging the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who is not dependent at all upon her service for anything. He's just accepting because he's very kind. When it's time for creation, he doesn't even call upon the goddess of fortune. He just, from his own navel, he generates a lotus flower and voila, Lord Brahma is born. And he empowers Lord Brahma to do the same without female companionship. He just produces living beings out of his own body. This Supreme Lord is completely independent. Even the great sages, great rishis, they cannot know him, but there are those that can know him. And he lists some of the Mahajans. They can know him because of their full dependence on the Supreme Independent. And because they're fully dependent, they never become proud of whatever it is that the independent gives to the dependent. They remain dependent. Pride never enters into the heart. Trying to be the enjoyer of the facilities that are given by the Supreme Independent never comes into their consciousness. Such persons can represent the disciplic succession. He says, I want to read, it's a very nice verse. Yeah. Who can be worthy of the name of the Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead? Sri Krishna. Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of his feet in order to award to Lord Shiva a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. So at the top of the list of powerful persons in creation, we have Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and they're receiving the benedictions and purifications coming from the Supreme Independent. There's only one that fits in the category of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's Krishna. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment. This is where it's connected to Dhritarashtra. Oh. Which means they have something that an ordinary attached person doesn't have. They have attachment to the Supreme, which means their involvement, like Bhishma, their involvement with creation is just service. The purpose of a self-realized or self-controlled person, when they extend their senses into the world, it's service. It's not sense gratification or material enjoyment or anticipating something, happiness through material contact. It's just service. And such persons can at once give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, the Paramahamsa stage or the Narottama stage, beyond the sannyas and beyond the dhira stage. How do they get that qualification? By the hearing process, hearing from the proper persons who at once can deliver one to that position. It's an exaggeration. No, it's not an exaggeration. The potency is there at once to do that. And the only limitation is we're holding on. Or the other way of saying the same thing, but there isn't sufficient sincerity of purpose. No, so what I'm doing right now is I'm answering all your how-to questions. So you don't have to ask your how-to questions. Just say, just listen to the class again. Sorry about that. Sincerity of purpose. And with that, what is a demonstration of sincerity of purpose? Here's something temporary. Anyabhilasha trishanyam jnana karma janavratam. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam. These standard teachings from the scripture. Something doesn't enhance devotional service, into the wastebasket. Something enhances devotional service, into the heart. I incorporate that into my life. Or like our discussion this morning, application. Right? And when there's application, hey, it works. Realization brings appreciation. We become happy. We have spiritual relationships that we're very happy having. We become, you know, alive instead of donkeys chasing after the carrot. Very vivid picture of what people are doing. Just not thinking, just going along sense gratifiers, chasing the carrot. Do it this way or do it that way, it's just chasing the carrot of sense gratification. And there's never satisfaction. So, giving up that dull-headedness and coming to the inquisitive stage with a real, clear sense of purpose. coming in, Krishna sends some representative. Really taking that, let me hear this message. Ask questions. Make sure you're clear. Apply it. Application. Realization, appreciation. Keep going. Keep going. With sincerity of purpose. When that happens, this stage of renunciation, it's already included. Where the highest perfection of the renounced order of life can be reached, by which nonviolence and renunciation are consequential has its Sanskrit word svadharma. It just goes with the territory. It's a byproduct. It's a subset. Mathematics, you understand, right? Subset. It's a subset of a set. Within the $1 million is $100. It's already accomplished. Renunciation, in the language of the Bhagavatam, bhakti, from the hearing process, three things come. Bhakti, a desire to serve the Supreme Lord, arises. Para isha anubhav, feelings for the Supreme Controller. And viraktir anyatracha, detachment, or, you know, causelessly knowledge and detachment come. That other verse from the second chapter, first canto. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojataha janayati ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahaitukam. The Bhagavatam's message is very consistent. In poetic language, various ways, the same thing is being said. Here, Dhritarashtra, or it is the exchange between Dhritarashtra and Vidura. Vidura is the change agent. Dhritarashtra, because he trusts his younger brother. He respects his younger brother, although he's his younger brother. His younger brother has always been very kind to him, always offer words of wisdom. He's always been the sadhu, but the difference now is he's not just a sadhu, he's a pure devotee. He's not just wise. When earlier, when Vidura was still 34 years prior to his leaving, and all the time when he was in the royal palace, Vidura was always, I mean, he is Yamaraj, so he was always associating with saintly people. That's who he hung out with. In addition to, like, going and getting on the case of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, and providing, expanding his wings and giving shelter to the Pandavas, his main thing was he associated with saintly people. But he hadn't undergone that detachment which his pilgrimage provided him the opportunity for, and then the attachment to Krishna through Maitreya's association. He came back a pure devotee, beyond just being a wise person. So he had the added sadhu power, the potency to detach Dhritarashtra. Plus a whole number of things, all the expectations that Dhritarashtra had, they got smashed. The lives of his sons got smashed. His hopes for, you know, all of his hopes were smashed. They were smashed because he was opposing the will of Krishna. Fool. And he was told so many times, you'll be defeated. Krishna's on their side. These men are virtuous, and your son is not. Virtue is going to prevail. Don't destroy the kingdom. Blind attachment. He kept plodding along, chasing the carrot. sacrificing virtue, sacrificing honor, sacrificing for what? For some mundane kingdom that he never was entitled to get anyways. Because he was standing on the wrong side of God and godliness. Not entitled. So, through the association of Vidura, at once that was broken. And now he had these three options. Dira, sannyas, Narottama. Definitely not Narottama. And sannyas, he's 80 years old and there's Gandhari and just get out of here. Leave this place at once. And that's what he says, next verse. Text 28. Please. Please isn't in the verse, it's just ataha. Therefore, leave for the north immediately without letting your relatives know. Why without letting your relatives know? You go tell them and they're going to say, oh, Dhritarashtra, you can't do this because you're so old and you're blind and we'll take care of you and no problem. We don't have any problem with you. Just stay here and rot. So don't go speak to your relatives. Cold-hearted. No, not cold-hearted. Practical. Dira. For soon that time will approach which will diminish the good qualities of men. Now this is a foreboding of just the general, you know, message of the Bhagavatam, the advancement of the age of Kali, which has been spoken about earlier. No, excuse me, will be spoken about later in this canto. So it's just like a little prelude to future chapters, the unfolding of history. But Dhritarashtra knew Krishna's departing from this world marked the end of Dwarpa Yuga and Kali Yuga had begun. So again, Prabhupada writes in this purport, by the grace of Vidura, one can attain the stage, this Dira stage, immediately, simply by willing to adopt the means. That's limited. But that limited something Dhritarashtra could do, and he did. When back to chapter 18, Suta Goswami says the association with a saintly person is so powerful that even if you just see them, I mean, ideally one should not just see them, one should hear from them and serve them. But even if you just see them, they're so powerful that without a delay, one can cleanse oneself of all disqualifications resulting from, now in this case he's speaking about lower births, but what's the cause of lower births? It's past misdeeds, it's karma. Karma is the determination, guna and karma is the determination of janma. So one can be released from the entanglements of past misdeeds and past involvements with lower modes of nature, you know, acting according to one's lower self, just by seeing such a person. What to speak of hearing from them, as Vidura had done with Maitreya, or as Suta had done with Shukadeva Goswami, or as anyone in the disciplic succession follows that process, as we're being trained in that process. An unqualified person can become qualified. A Dhritarashtra can become a qualified person. He becomes a qualified person. And as Prabhupada, we discussed this morning, 5,000 years ago, there was one Dhritarashtra, and today every house has at least one. So many Dhritarashtras, so many persons attached. And this message can be very effective if delivered by a suitable person. So we're meant to become trained to become those suitable persons, to receive the message and to be instruments of the disciplic succession to deliver that message. And it's not that one you have to wait until you're in the renounced order of life to do so. Not at all. As you have the experience from your own teacher, he's not in the renounced order of life, but he's certainly renounced. He's renounced the material conception of anticipating enjoyment through contact with occupation, the fruits of occupation, and married life, and money, and there's no consideration of anticipating happiness from those things, and yet dutifully carrying out all those things, all of those things. Wife, home, money, job, civic duties, very responsibly in Krishna consciousness carrying out those things. You have a perfect situation with teachings and the actual walking perambulatory example of the pages of the Bhagavatam. And you can go and sit at the person's feet and hear and observe. Assimilate that mode, assimilate those qualities by association. What a gift. Hare Krishna. And still there's complacency. Oh, devotees, please wake up. Shake off complacency. Recognize what's happening. From this chapter 13, it's a very wonderful chapter. Very strong medicine. And because the medicine is that Devidura is delivering, naturally the purports are also of such strong messages. Should be very clear. Please don't continue holding on to a material conception of. So in your student and in your household stages of life, cultivate this very carefully, so that, like Sutta Goswami says, self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross and subtle mind, and go away for attaining the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which nonviolence and renunciation are consequential. It's not intimidating. It's perfection. And I've only covered two verses. The subject matter is very wonderful. It's very relevant. Although it's about death and stuff like that. Just, how to prepare oneself for that stage. It starts now, and it starts immediately. Because every moment there's a small death. Every moment there's something that we have that we're losing. Like youth and vitality. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to keep the schedule that I'm keeping. Flying around and coming in for a landing and just like nothing happened. But, you know, Prabhupada did like that. I was speaking of another little anecdote and I'll end. I was sitting next to Hari Sori Prabhu, who's was Prabhupada's personal servant for longer than anybody else. He was personal servant longer than anybody else because so many other personal servants fell into the pit of familiarity by serving Prabhupada and fell from Krishna consciousness. But Hari Sori was protected because he never fell into that pit. He was always in a most respectful, reverential mood, although in immediate vicinity of Prabhupada. And so he's a great resource to understand intimately about Prabhupada's life. So during prasadam, we were talking about, you know, how nice the prasadam is in Mayapur, and he said, I have to be very careful because what if I have a kidney problem? Then he was saying how severe it gets sometimes if he's not careful. And then he just from that, he just went into Prabhupada. He said, when Prabhupada was present, we generally have two kidneys. Prabhupada had one kidney was completely dysfunctional, and the other kidney didn't work right. One was like out of commission, and the other didn't work right. So as a result, Prabhupada had inflammation in his body all the time of uric acid and other kinds of things that kidneys would normally discharge. So much so that his body would swell. That's one of the reasons why he had massage, because he also had an arthritic problem. He had, you know, a number of physical problems. So, but then he went into how Prabhupada, just his service mood was so strong that he just went above the pain. It wasn't that he was unaware of the pain. When you become Krishna conscious, you don't become unconscious. He was conscious, but he was Krishna conscious, and so that was temporary, and there was things that were eternal. And then he explained that sometimes he gave specific instances. Prabhupada was in London, and at 1:30 in the morning, he rang his buzzer, you know, that would tell the servant, you should come, 1:30 in the morning. So Hari Sori, you know, deep in slumber, heard the bell and came to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was sitting there looking very stern. And he said, I'm in so much pain, I cannot work. And that was disturbing. He was in pain all the time. But sometimes the pain was such that he couldn't work, and that was too much for Prabhupada. The pain wasn't too much, but being unable to transcend the pain. Then he gave another example of a similar thing. He said, normally Prabhupada would continue with his... And well, by the way, we'll just remember his age. How old was Prabhupada when he came to America? 70 years old. So let's, you know, he's in his late 70s, 80 years old. Think of people that you know that are in their late 70s, 80 years old. Keeping a schedule that his, you know, 25-year-old athletic Americans couldn't keep up with. Because he's just, you know, so fixed in his service. He had to have three people around him because he would, you know, he would wear them out. They couldn't keep up with his schedule, his lifestyle, service. That even when he was sick, only on a few rare occasions. We hear lectures of Prabhupada. I was just listening today to a lecture of Prabhupada. He's coughing and coughing. But, you know, he's not moaning and groaning. Oh, he's serving. He's just pushing aside the discomfort and doing what he really loves to do, serve Krishna. Only on rare occasions would Prabhupada not translate, speak, keep his schedule. Then he got into a tooth situation. He said Prabhupada had an abscess. You know what abscess means? It means like intense infection. You ever have a toothache? You know what happens when you have a toothache? Your whole attention goes to the tooth. Whatever's going on, it's just a tooth. Prabhupada, his whole cheek was swollen. And Hari Sori saw it, Prabhupada's cheek puffed out like that, and said, Prabhupada, you have an infection in your mouth? And Prabhupada, And he said, would you like to go to a dentist? I can make the arrangement. You can go to a dentist. He said, if the dentist looked in my mouth, he'd remove everything. No dentist. And so then, some days later, Hari Sori noticed the swelling had gone down, and he asked Prabhupada, is the infection gone? Prabhupada just looked at him, while he's still looking at him, opened up the drawer, pulled out the tooth, and handed it to Hari Sori. Didn't say a word, closed the drawer again. You know, just reached in his mouth and pulled out the tooth. Then went on with the service. Because service to Krishna. He didn't just write about it. Totally immersed. Transcendental to the dualities of material existence. And there were more. He went on. It was a great lunch. He had, up close, first-hand experience of how transcendental Prabhupada was. Speak of vyavasayatmika buddhi. He had an instruction for a spiritual master, and it was his life and soul. And it carried him all around the world. And it carried him right to the lotus feet of Krishna at the same time. These messages have that potency. It's about Krishna and achieving shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. It's all one-way signs, heading right for Krishna's lotus feet. With all the beware sign, look out for the curve, look out for the ditch, look out for the bump in the road. All the caution signs are there. But it all leads to Krishna. Once the potency is there for one who has sufficient sincerity of purpose. That's Krishna consciousness. The eligibility for Krishna consciousness is one's Krishna consciousness. That's sincerity of purpose. Of course, so many things are attendant, that including Krishna sends some representative to fulfill that sincere purpose, and one genuinely takes shelter, which is demonstrated by application of that which we hear in a mood of service. Not just information regurgitation. We say all the things we're supposed to say and don't say the things we're not supposed to say. And it's not just behaviors, but in a sincere mood, applying the things that these messages convey, we make our spiritual connection, the Krishna connection. That's Krishna consciousness. So any discussion? Questions? Yes.
Perhaps for most of the people, Krishna consciousness starts with a mechanical process.
Sure, because that's what we're used to.
Yeah. So when does it convert to a mechanical process?
When we make the decision. There must be a conscious, a point where the light goes on. You consciously choose I'm going to follow this process of devotional service because it's my constitutional position to do so, not just for the mechanical, you know, the four reasons that pious people take up devotional service. There has to be, you know, you switch channels, the mechanical to the devotional. Rather than I want something that, you know, the mercantile mentality approach to, from doing that, now I've understood something that I didn't understand before. It's like I was explaining the devotees that I was meeting in the course of my travel this time. I used to think that, and now I understand what Krishna consciousness really is. I'm very grateful to have that understanding, and just encouraging them to continue cultivate that understanding by the same method that they got that understanding. It's by somebody that has that understanding, and they successfully imparted it, meaning the persons were actually eager for the genuine thing besides the mechanical thing. They just hadn't heard it so clearly and purely presented before. And so now, and to repeat the answer to your question, through that good association, now they're making a conscious choice. I want the relationship with Krishna feature, and relationship with Krishna means so many things. Relationship with Krishna's devotees that are on the loving network of serving the devotees of the Lord. Not because I'm going to get something or because it relieves something, but because that's who I am. It's my real identity. It's what real life is. It's what eternal life is. I want that. I want the real thing. I sincerely want that real thing. The light went on, and they said yes. Not just with the mouth, but with the heart. So that's what has to happen. Krishna will send the association, and then, but you know, one can say no. Or one can say maybe. Or one can say, I'll do it later. Or one can say, I'm working on it. So it's the actual internalization of that message and move with that message, abide by that message. Yes. What? Okay.
His quality is good for me, so I should cultivate those kind of attitude. Like humility is good.
Yeah, that's this is called mode of goodness. I do something because I know that it's good for me to do it. That's goodness. It's cultivating the quality of goodness. I do this thing because it will purify me. Humility is better than egotism. And so forth. Being regulated is better than being unregulated. Controlling my speech is better than anger. So I'll do it because it's, I'll cultivate it because it's better. So, your point is? That's good, but it's not sufficient. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah. Do that for Krishna. Then it's perfect. Whatever you do, do it for Krishna. That's perfect. And whatever you don't do it because it would not be pleasing to Krishna.
basically, what are the distractions in focusing on the consciousness of this Lord Krishna? I'm doing this activity with these participants, and I also face a lot of distractions with that. I get distracted with these things.
Welcome to the world of material existence. And so? And everyone here can say the same thing. And so?
I'm trying hard to work on it.
Good. That's what you need to cultivate. The fact, so my comment was, everyone, misery loves company. We're all in the same miserable situation. So we can be happy. But the real happiness is that you're the sincere endeavor. Krishna will see that sincere endeavor. And then the Krishna factor is Krishna can pull you out. It's not your endeavor alone that can do it. Rupa Goswami teaches that in Nectar of Devotion. It's not that the devotional practices in themselves, that's it. It's Krishna's reciprocation. It's the internal potency of Krishna. It's not the mechanical, it's not the activities themselves. It's the consciousness, the sincerity of purpose behind, and the application, you endeavor. Krishna sees, Krishna helps. That's what we want. We want, it's a relationship with Krishna. Whatever happens, we want that relationship with Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. So you just continue endeavoring, trusting in Krishna. Masuchaha. But Masuchaha. Just keep. That sincerity of purpose needs to become stronger. And it will become stronger if you continue cultivating. How will it become stronger? You'll experience Krishna taking you by the hand and helping you make the next step. And you'll think, wow. And you're ready then for the next step. You're feeling, using our discussion from this morning, you're feeling great clarity that Krishna is real, the process is real, Krishna reciprocates, I have great appreciation for Krishna's being there. He's always there. We just got our attention in the wrong places. And that's what that struggle is, residual from so many countless lifetimes of material absorption. So we have to pay our dues for those misuses of free will for long stretches of time. Outcomes. That's okay. I trust in Krishna and the process of bhakti. So let me, when you get that, we get to that space where you're realizing I'm endeavoring, but then redouble your effort and do so with a greater, at least strive for a greater sincerity of purpose. Not just so I can overcome the struggle and another victory, because that's what we're accustomed to. We're accustomed to those kind of perks. I did it. You know, in academic pursuits, it's a whole trail of those kinds of victories. And Krishna consciousness is not that kind. And we have to learn that. And we may have to learn it the hard way, just like, you know, keep trying to be victorious over the material energy. It's not going to happen that way. It's when we become dependent upon the Supreme Independent while endeavoring at the same... We had this discussion, came up last night, in fact, right around this time, India time, and one devotee was saying, I couldn't understand his question, and so I got a translation of his question, you know, just because he wasn't clear about it. Taking initiative versus feeling dependent was the question. And when you understand your position of dependence, that's when you really take initiative from the soul. That's when it really begins. That's when real endeavor begins. Real endeavor means I recognize my position is completely dependent from the those guiding me in spiritual life. They've given me this instruction, and now I'm going with it in complete dependence. I'm taking initiative, and my initiative will never bear fruit unless Krishna decorates. But I trust in Krishna. Even if Krishna decides for millions of lifetimes to not decorate, I trust in Krishna. I'm going toward Krishna. Because I know the other program is... It's not. Not for me. I'm convinced. No turning back. Going forward. Bhaktisiddhanta said like that, a Vaishnava is one who always looks where they're going. They don't look back. They may reflect, how unfortunate, I wasted so much valuable time and did so many foolish things, but they don't go dwell there. They're going forward. That's Vaishnava. In the course of going there, you're realizing, you know, the realization is, who knows how many lifetimes I've wasted in material activity, and there's this residual energy holding, and I'm holding on. I want to stop holding on. I want to. It gives you impetus to go further. Humility doesn't mean you become, you know, just this wimp, this weak person, this can't do anything because I'm humble, meek and humble. You take initiative, strong. Vridhavrata, with full dependence upon Krishna. They're not... Maybe you can recall this from when I visited Jagannath Puri and came back. I was expressing, I have a very strong impression from visiting Jagannath Puri, and these two seemingly opposing things are so prominent. Such an intense... the associates of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya. And through him, his associates. Such an intense eagerness to achieve the goal of life. And abject humility, which seemed to be, you know, at opposite ends. They're like antagonistic to each other qualities. But they're not. In the spiritual platform, they're completely complementary. Perfectly complementary. They become manifest in the nth degree. As one advances in spiritual life, the intensification of eagerness to achieve the goal of life grows and grows and grows and grows. And one's sense of humility, like Sutta, I'm disqualified. And then he speaks the whole Bhagavatam. Because he's feeling empowered. I don't have the qualification, but this descending process brings to me the qualification. It removes the disqualification. So it's not me. That's real humility. No false ego. Service without false ego. No expectation. No pride. Just relationship with Krishna. And it intensifies and intensifies. So welcome to the path of devotional service. Keep going. Let that sense of struggle be a reminder about what's behind me. Now let me keep going forward with full faith. Minimally, or initially, full faith in the instructions, which means full faith in the instructor, which means seeing the instructor in a spiritual conception, not in a material conception. Because how can I place my faith in some other impermanent thing? But those that represent Krishna carry the potency of Krishna. So then I can see in a spiritual conception. Person, the instructions, the process, even the endeavors of the soul. If I just do it because, you know, I want some glory, or I want to accomplish, and I want to master another something, as I've mastered so many somethings in the course of my lifetime, here's another something to master. One isn't going to advance. You'll advance towards another suffering. Okay. You have a cold, huh? Sometimes your face just flushes with discomfort. Sorry. Anything else? Yes.
During this recitation of Bhagavatam by Ram Krishna.
Yeah.
Sudhir Goswami, it appears from the chronology wise, this Ram Krishna Sutra described Bhagavatam while Lord Balarama was on his stool.
There's something about that chronology that And at different times, I can't give you a very clear answer. There is a clear answer, and I can't give you that very clear answer. Because I've gotten it, and it was just an information item, and it just went away. When the Kurukshetra battle, when Balarama was on pilgrimage, it goes something like this. See if I can reconstruct it. He had gone on pilgrimage before the battle had started. He came back at some interval, and then again he went away. The Kurukshetra battle was finished. Maharaj Yudhisthira was installed. Kali Yuga began. Krishna left the planet, but Balaram's still on the planet. I think it's something like that. This happened, you know, so afterwards. He's still on pilgrimage. Krishna has gone, Balaram remains. Maharaj Parikshit, because he becomes king. He's cursed. Bhagavatam is spoken. So the only thing chronologically that makes sense is that Balaram was existing on the planet much after Krishna left the planet. So somehow during the beginning stages of Kali Yuga, which that also is not so clear. So I'll do a little research just on this chronology question, and I'll get back to you, because I'd like to clear it up for myself. Anything else? Okay. Yes.
Specific attachments are known. If specific attachments are known, become known, then how do you work on them?
One more time.
When some specific attachments become known.
When some specific attachment becomes known.
Then how to work on it?
Then how to work on it. Okay. I'll give you a rerun of... this question came up several times again during this visit. A three-part simple formula. Those things that... there are some things in your Krishna consciousness that give you particular strength. In addition to, you know, the basics, rising, Mangal Arati, chanting, there are some specific things that give strength to each one of us. Someone it may be, you know, very careful study. Someone it may be serving the devotees. Someone it may be singing bhajan. Someone it may be different things. So those things that you know that are essential and give you special strength, give great attention to those things. Then from a position of strength, there are some things that you really like to do. Like, you know, that there's prescribed duty, emergency duty, and what's the third one? Discretionary. You know, when you have discretion, what do you like to, you may like to play mridanga, or you may like to, you know, do some research for some service that Krishna Smarana has asked you to do, and you really like to do that. So preferred, that's the third one. There's prescribed duties, emergency duties, and preferred duties. So those things that and work on. So again, there's strength. Then select those. Then from that position of the third thing is from the position of strength, and being you having your psychophysical nature well connected. Spiritual strength is there, and your psychophysical nature is well connected in devotional service. So then there's this other area, and from that other area. You select. This is now retraction of bad habits topic. You remember that from one yatra, right? Select something and really with the same focus of Krishna consciousness, do that. Work on that for Guru and Krishna. With great concentration over a sustained period of time, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, for 5 years. You know, be prepared for the long haul. Whatever it takes, kind of commitment. And meanwhile, you're bringing the resources of good consciousness, spiritual strength, working with the right purpose on this thing where there is some weakness. You're marshaling to that weakness the sum total of your Krishna consciousness. That do it for Guru and Krishna consciousness, not only the thing. And stay with it till it's gone. Not only, you know, now it's not such a problem, so I'll get complacent again. Do it till it's gone. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami that a good physician doesn't just reduce the symptoms of his patient, but he brings the patient to the stage where there's no longer any symptom left. He says that to Sanatana Goswami in relation to the nice chadar that he's wearing. Recall that? Sanatana Goswami had left the royal service. In the course of travel, he came in contact with one relative. So he was dressed like a mendicant, and his relative gave him a costly chadar. So when he came into Lord Chaitanya's association, he saw that Lord Chaitanya kept glancing at his chadar. So he understood, he disapproves. So one day he went to the side of a river. He saw one mendicant who was drying his woolen blanket. He said, "Excuse me, sir, but can I trade you this costly chadar for that torn woolen blanket?" And the mendicant said, "Stop teasing like this. This isn't nice." He said, "No, I mean it. I'd like to give this to you, but I'd like your torn woolen blanket." So the man made the exchange, and then he came back before Lord Chaitanya, and then Lord Chaitanya made this remark: "You're following the path of renunciation, of sannyas. Then go all the way. Don't hold on to some vestiges of material attachment as you're pursuing the path of renunciation." Then the physician, an expert physician, removes the disease completely, so it won't come back again. So keep working with that bad habit, or whatever you want to call it. Retraction of that bad habit should be till it's gone. And what will happen is, by doing that one thing, many other things will also disappear, or be far more in a position where they can be dealt with, because it's on the strength of Krishna consciousness, not on the strength of your endeavor. It's on the strength of connecting with this descending mercy, because alone, it's just a struggle. Duratyaya. And we're all very familiar with that struggle territory. But then, Krishna consciousness is mam eva prapadyante. So it makes any subsequent retraction of other bad habits far more doable, just from doing one properly. And the overall quality of goodness and transcendence becomes lighter and brighter, more radiant in one's life. So it's a very important step, but don't do it independently, or get into anartha nirvritti consciousness. Just stay with Krishna consciousness, and on the strength of Krishna consciousness, eradicate that unwanted thing in a very sustained, guided, meaning, stay accountable, report regularly, take guidance, which are the things and how to do those things, and report them, so stay in that accountable position. And there's great strength there also, another enormous strength, resource that Krishna sends. And it's a very good metaphor. It's a disease, this other thing, whatever these other things are that we're carrying, it's a disease. And it's 8:30. I'm going to end. Srila Prabhupada.